Yeah. All righty, here we go. Writing to us is good and good for you. 9 out of 10 dentists recommend that you write to the Tom and Curly Show. Get a chance to vent the spleen. Bending the spleen is good and good for you as well. And here comes a teeny tiny lady, the wooden wagon. Oh, look at it. It's all festooned, Tom. It's got the little twinkle lights on it, and she is waving. And there she is right there on board, waving back to her. She's surrounded by bits and pieces of plexiglass. And who is in the wagon with her? But it's George. Tom George Clooney's in the wagon. He's got himself in. Looks like he's cutting his own hair.
I've been cutting my own hair for 25 years.
Your hair?
Look, I have my hair's like really like straw, you know? And so it's easy to cut. You can't really make too many mistakes.
Go ahead.
So years ago, I bought a thing called a Flowbee.
But you can't get a haircut.
Yeah, it's Flowbee.
Have you thought of a perm?
My haircuts take literally 2 minutes.
Don't believe him. Diving into the
of course she believes him. He's dreamy.
Alrighty. Come on in, everybody. Do love. By the way, our Facebook page is chock full of stuff. Normally I don't put anything up there, but video of where I spent Thanksgiving with Rye is there available. And then also
we'll put the Rachel one up later.
What are you pacing yourself?
You want to space these things out, you know, yeah.
Why is that?
Well, that's what's weird about this show is that we generate content so haphazardly that it's better to
stretch it out.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So it's like a starving person. You don't want to give them too much food because then their stomach gets all distended. Okay. So you slowly ease them back into eating.
Okay.
I started coming around and maybe we should do more Facebook stuff, Tom.
Why? Is it the Cleellum effect?
No, just generally, I think it's starting to catch on. The whole idea of sharing stuff.
There's this thing called Twitter.
Yeah. No, honestly, you know, I don't know about how you feel, but it's like we have no presence. I mean, zero. And there are other shows that have a lot of presence. And when you see the fact that like 1,300 people, that's it. It's like you can't keep putting your head in the sand. That's all. So maybe just starting to, I don't know. Maybe, what, are we on the air right now?
It's all just marketing.
Yeah. You know what? It's called marketing. You're supposed to market every once in a while. That's all. I mean, we are number one, right?
That's sort of,
whatever. But the important thing is, you know, we don't want to get passed by and be like, well, we should have, could have, would have. The fact that the NHL, I don't got to ask Todd Lewicki this because I didn't find out from him. He didn't tell me because he knows I'll blab it on the air. Even if I said, hey, off the record, which I love saying. It makes you sound like a journalist. Except if you work for CNN. So when they were delayed, kept delaying the name. They're going to come up with a name for the team. And one of the big ones that everybody went was Kraken. Like, oh, you know, because that would be like, oh, that would be the great thing. You know, release the Kraken.
Release the Kraken.
Right. So then there was all the stuff, the whole, you know, COVID. And then you got into the George Floyd and all that. And we kept delaying. And I thought maybe they were holding back because they wanted to find something completely and absolutely sort of neutral of anything political. Right. And maybe that's why they went with Kraken, which is this sort of mythical big octopus, right, Tom? Isn't that what it is?
Not an octopus, but like a sea monster.
Sea monster, okay.
Yeah.
All right, well, they come up with it. And now, when you go to a website like not, well, maybe Drudge has got it, but Gateway Pundit or Red State or any of the other ones, it keeps talking about, oh, this is it. Release the Kraken. We're going to release all the information about all the voter fraud stuff that's going on and Dominion and Venezuela, and this is it, and they're going to release the Kraken, and this is it, and we're going to stop Biden from taking the White House because we're going to release the Kraken. And now it is so political and so hot for the people on the right, you can hear people and see people texting and sharing on Facebook that, get ready, here it comes, we're about to release the Kraken.
Yeah, and I was wondering where this thing started. So, yes, this often happens, and it can happen with any political movement. They take on some kind of symbol that was an innocent symbol until it became politicized or however you want to characterize it. But Sidney Powell, the famous or infamous Sidney Powell, the conspiracy theorist behind Rudy Giuliani in that infamous press conference, she literally called herself a Kraken.
Ah!
She was a Kraken gathering evidentiary steam that was going to be unleashed, so that she actually made that personal reference. Now, she might have been capitalizing on something that was already happening online in social media on the right anyway, but yes, this now now has become the most political of all kind of names with Release the Kraken, and the hashtag Release the Kraken is trending, and it's trending, you know, as a symbol for all these, you know, sort of rightward thinking conspiracy theorists about the stolen election.
Right.
And it reminded me of this Pepe the Frog cartoon character. Was an innocent, I just watched this documentary on TV about, was this, you know, relatively innocent character in a kind of an alternative or underground comic book that ended up becoming picked up and becoming very popular online, and then became like a symbol for all things right. And they interviewed the poor cartoonist who said, "What is happening? This is, it has nothing to do with this." But he couldn't really sort of you know, fight against it. It became so you know, potent.
Right.
And so I think his approach was, you just got to wait it out.
Yes.
That eventually something else, and that is the suggestion in this article we were looking at. What is right now, the NHL has had no response, which I think is a smart response.
Sure.
And they said, and the advice they say is, so what should they do? And they went to, so the Indiana Hoosiers, Indiana University, the Hoosiers. For a while, it was, the Hoosiers name was taken over by like street gangs or something.
Uh-huh.
And the way, and it became so prevalent that they said, what are we going to do? That's our nickname. And they're besmirching our nickname. The plan that they took on, and they suggest was more.
Yeah. Oh, Tom's going to.
Hey, we are the Hoosiers. This is why we are the Hoosiers. These are the values we represent. If you just state it, and it's sort of like the counter narrative that that's okay, then the people that are cheering for Indiana University, for instance, or in Indianans who call themselves Hoosiers, they don't feel like, oh, well, that's the only alternative. And maybe that's what, you know, the Kraken organization is going to have to do.
Yeah. Just wait.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they say it'll either peak and then and dissipate, or it'll become stuck forever in consciousness. At that point, they may have to, you know, go back to the drawing board. But as of now, they say that it's just something that, you know, they'll have to weather the storm.
Yeah, I think it just sort of stays off to the right. It's not like what you had when the Russians stole the election, and when the Russians took over and got Donald Trump elected, which the media picked up and ran for years. That was different,
John,
but this is just...
That's not an image.
Right.
We're talking about an appropriation of an image that had nothing to do with what's being appropriated.
I'm talking
for.
About nonsense coming from the right regarding the Kraken thing, nonsense that came from the left during the Russian thing in 2016. But just generally, let it lay. Don't say anything about it. Don't try
release
to do anything.
Release the commies.
You release the... Right. release the Russians. All right, so good for them. They'll wait it out. By the way, this is the Giving Tuesday. It is known as hashtag Giving Tuesday, which started, what was it, 2000, what year did the person do, 2012 or something, that the creator of it was with a nonprofit, said we'd seen Black Friday and everybody spent all the money, and then up came on Monday was the idea of
Cyber Monday
and people spending money. And then this individual said, I got an idea. How about this thing called Giving Tuesday, where rather than spending money on something else, give from the heart and give to a nonprofit. And it then grew, and it kept growing and growing. And then with social media, it kept growing to the point where it seems like you are getting tons of emails every day, starting in the morning, Giving Tuesday, hashtag Giving Tuesday, giving some donation to some nonprofit asking you for money. And this piece that I forget who wrote this is from the fundraiser.com, basically saying, what should you do with your nonprofit on a day like this, Tom?
Yeah, no, they're not talking about people like us that would contribute. They're talking about if you're running a nonprofit.
Right.
How should you advertise yourself for Giving Tuesday to benefit most from it? And the suggestion here is they're all in favor of everyone giving money to nonprofits and all of that. It's not an attack on charitable giving at all. It's more about, is this really the best use of your time and energy? And they say that one of the problems is that because they've designated this day, and that's all well and good, Giving Day, every single nonprofit, big and small, are all hitting up the same people at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So that the first problem is your message is going to get crowded out.
Yep.
That if you are one of, and it's true, you look in your phone, you get like 50 messages.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe if the 49th and the 50th message arrived on the Thursday after Tuesday, they might get more attention just because you're not so flooded. So that's just something to keep in mind. Another one I thought was interesting is that the key to, and you would, I mean, this is your bailiwick, John, but you know, the whole nonprofits and how people, foundations can stay afloat. You need big donors and you need constant donors.
Yes.
And they say one of the problems about a day like Giving Tuesday is that it encourages spot giving, which is all well and good if you need a lot of money in a short amount of time for some kind of major, infrastructure or something, it might be effective. But the problem is with spot giving is you don't set up a pattern of giving. And so if somebody says, hey, on this particular day, I gave $500, and then they come back in like 2 months and they say, well, what are you talking about? I gave you $500. Mm-hmm. You know, that the key is for successful nonprofits is to get the steady pace, the steady drumbeat of every month you get something or every 6 months or something.
It's easier to budget that way.
Exactly. And that's one of the problems. And then they also claim, finally, that you don't raise that much, that whatever effort. So let's say that you spent 5 hours of your time, you know, trying to come up with a fundraising idea or gimmick or message or something, that the amount of money that you might make might not be worth the time that you put into it.
That's right.
And that it's better to think, you know, more broadly rather than flashy. I think the point here is that Giving Tuesday is a great kind of flashy headline, but really, if you're a nonprofit, that is not going to be your bread and butter. That'll be like gravy on top, but it's not going to be the thing that gets you through these tough times for a nonprofit.
Well, they did an analysis of the amount of money, and then they divided it by the number of things and then number of nonprofits. They said it worked out to be, what, $4,000 per nonprofit. And they said when you take the number of hours that you put into your nonprofit, is $4,000 really worth it? You'd be better off doing something else with it. I always encourage people at all those auctions that I do, it's $83 a month. That's $1,000 a year, or $42 a month, that's $500 a year. You don't even feel it, just comes out. Remember one time a couple of years ago, my accountant said, do you know how many nonprofits you're giving $42 a month to? I was like, no. He goes, 9. I was like, well, that's good for them, I guess. I mean, I didn't even really feel it. It's just like clunk, you know, 42, clunk, 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 and then eventually it adds up and it's consistent for them. And always these nonprofits, I would do these events and I always say to them, did you know the average American has $19 in their couch cushion? So I'd like you to make a donation from your couch. So that would be $19. And then I said, you know, and the couch every month has $19 it would like to regurgitate. Now, I know that's not necessarily true. It's like paying off like a slot machine every time you sit down. But Giving Tuesday, you just kind of get lost in the maze. Yeah. But the good news is that we have supported Treehouse, and you have supported Treehouse for years. 32 years we have been teaming up with them, and they are the ones that make sure that kids in the foster care system are not forgotten, their dreams are met and encouraged. There's great stories every single year. Treehouse did a great one a couple of years ago, Tommy. I remember this. They gave a young woman a camera. Remember this? Mm-hmm. And she went out and took photos, and then her photos were so good, I think she got picked up and got a job or a college degree, or she went off to some art. And it's like, if they hadn't given her that camera, then she wouldn't have discovered this talent. She wouldn't have gotten a scholarship to college to go into arts, and then her whole life has changed by a donation of like a $200 or $300 camera. So it ends up serving everybody. James O'Keefe is in a bit of a trouble. He's the guy that has a cinema. What's the name of the thing? Veritas program or project?
Yeah.
He's
not the one Cinema Verite.
Yeah. He's Veritas always the one that's doing sort of hidden camera things. Yeah. And he decided he was going to listen in somehow, somebody on the inside at CNN.
Hey, Jeff Zucker, you there?
He could listen, and they recorded for months. CNN does a 9 o'clock call where they get a chance to talk to all of the reporters about stories that you're working on. Jeff Zucker, who heads up CNN, listens in, and everybody sort of spitballs ideas. Same sort of thing we do on our show where we do a pre-show meeting. Well, apparently, James O'Keefe broke in today, letting him know.
Hey, this is James O'Keefe. Yeah. We've been listening to your CNN calls for basically 2 months, recording everything. Just wanted to ask you some questions if you have a minute. Do you still feel you're the most trusted name in news? Because I have to say, from what I've been hearing on these phone calls, I don't know about that. I mean, we got a lot of recordings that indicate you're not really that independent of a journalist.
Okay. Thank you for your comments. So everybody, in light of that, I think what we'll do is we'll set up a new system, and we'll be back with you. We'll do the rest of the call a little bit later.
We're going to release those recordings today at 7 o'clock. So stay tuned. It's going to be fun.
Thanks, everybody. Have a good day.
Yeah, you too. Bye-bye.
All right, so he did. He released the first one. Let's see. He dropped the first recording. The clip features Jamie Gangel and a producer. Wow, this is really long. Way too long.
Well, I've got in my email, they sent me some of the highlights. It's not the actual voice, but I could read what Jeff Zucker was saying if you
okay.
want
what is
some
that?
Of that.
Yeah.
Okay, so the very first one, this is just in the order of how they sent him out. This is Jeff Zucker. He's the CNN president, if people are wondering. Mm-hmm. This quote from him. This is a president who knows he's losing, who knows he's in trouble, is sick. Maybe he is on the after effects of steroids or not. I don't know. But he's acting erratically and desperately, and we need to not normalize that. Another quote from him. You know, this is what we've come to expect for the last 3.5-4 years, but it clearly is exacerbated by the time that we're in and the issues that he, Trump's dealing with. I think that we cannot just let it be normalized. He's all over the place and acting erratically, and I think we need to lean into that. Then, frankly, if we've made any mistake, it's been that the banners have been too polite, and we need to go well after Lindsey Graham. There's a ton going on. Let's stay strong. Let's stay newsy. Let's stay urgent. Let's be smart. There's a lot of news out there, and Lindsey Graham really deserves it. I mean,
is anybody shocked that CNN has got bias, or that they're
well? That doesn't even sound that biased to me, though. That's the funny
Let's
thing
go get
about
em.
This. This
yeah.
isn't. I think that the reason I think that Veritas leaked that that break in is because I don't think there's stuff. If this is any evidence of it, usually you lead with your best stuff. That's not really outrageous enough.
Mm. Okay.
Maybe we'll have to listen to that long cut we didn't have time for instead.
No, I listened to it. It's Jamie Gangel just basically saying, talking about the transition and then, like, you know, how you're going to want to position the story. How do you tell the story?
Okay.
I just hope tomorrow he's going to release more. I hope no one has recorded any of our pre-show meetings.
See, I know it's like fair, but it's also like you can't help but be, interested. Sort of like gossip.
Let's see. CNN is going to bring legal... charges again. It all depends on where he did the calls from. Like, is it a two-party consent? My brother's got a friend who's an attorney and calls people, goes to New Jersey and makes the call from New Jersey because in New Jersey
it's a one-person consent.
I can't talk right now. I got to go over the bridge and record somebody. Oh my God,
that's funny.
They're funny. I mean, like funny, ha ha. Funny like a clown.
Funny, ha ha. Yeah.
Like funny, like a clown. Is that how you think I'm funny?
Yeah, like a clown. You're like a clown,
Joe Pesci. All right, Tracy Taylor. I think it's the last movie I saw. Tracy Taylor, look at traffic. What's going on? Hey, Washington Windows and Doors reminding you, take good care of that house of yours. If you've got aluminum around the frame of the outside, that is an old window. You're conducting heat out of the house. Not smart to do. And they're always a friendly reminder, don't be like Tom. And have a hole in the ground with a big piece of pig iron and not have windows and doors. Windows and doors, Lake Washington Windows and Doors. Let's keep the heat in. Let's keep the moisture out. It's the biggest investment you've got. It is your home, Lake Washington Windows and Doors. All right, so as Joe Biden puts together his economic team and prepares for the ambitious, quote-unquote, recovery plan, the economy has recovered much faster than experts have predicted, but this is what will now be before Biden and his folks, challenging the Republicans' renewed debt worry. So that's who wrote this piece?
A guy named David Lynch.
Lynch. Okay.
I don't think it was the filmmaker. No. This is setting up. This is like a return to normalcy. This is the good old days where Republicans and Democrats used to argue about, fiscal policy and the approach to government. It's not like the kind of flame-throwing issues that Donald Trump seemed to offer, at least once a week. This is a classic effort. The Democrats want to spend money to help the recovery that they feel like, people are hurting enough. Right now, they need another bridge to get to normalcy once the vaccines, kick in about 6 months. Uh-huh. And the Republicans want to be fiscally conservative and say, no, we shouldn't go into more debt.
Right.
And this is a classic Republican-Democrat-Republican debate. The only odd thing now, and this is what this article sets up, at least, is it's very convenient now for suddenly the Republicans to discover or rediscover they're concerned about the debt because under Trump, that debt went from 3.8 trillion to 7. something trillion, like up 71%. And so now it's very convenient for the Republicans to return to their legitimately, you know, I don't know what you call it, roots, traditional roots, which is keep spending down. But anyway, that's what the big debate will be. And that's why I think if the Republicans hold on to the Senate, which I still think they're apt to do, I know there's a lot of concern within Republicans that the president is making things hard for them in Georgia because he's insisting the whole election's fraudulent. If that's the case, why bother voting? Mm-hmm. But I still think that they're still gonna get it. Then you'll have the Senate, which, you know, as you often point out, John, Congress is one that has the purse strings.
That's right.
They're not going to give what Biden would like and would probably get if he had the Democrats in charge.
Well, the difference is, you keep saying, going back to the good old days, you go back to the good old days of the slowest recovery that we had had in the history.
I mean the last 60 years, John. I don't mean specifically. I just mean it's a return to the traditional Democratic argument for the last, you know, since the New Deal and Roosevelt's time.
Maynard Keynes. And the Keynesian is the idea that we're going to let the government be in control. The government's going to get larger and going to do the spending, and you're going to get into the nonsense of multipliers. Nancy Pelosi or some Maxine Waters talking about, for $1 of U.S. government spending, we get $2 multiplier effect. So the question is, you get bigger government, meaning taking more capital from the private sector to redirect it where they would like to have it go. And this is classic, as you say, it's classic idea. Do you want a bigger government or do you want a smaller government? Do you ever have a smaller government, which means less government being directed, less funds that are being generated by the private sector being redistributed by the public sector? So Joe Biden talking today, describing the economic goals.
The goal is simple: to keep businesses and schools open safely. And for millions of Americans who have lost their jobs or hours and have had to claim unemployment, we have to deliver them immediate relief. That includes affordable health care for millions of people who have lost it and are in danger of losing it, child care, sick leave, family leave, so workers don't have to choose between work and family, relief from rent and student loans.
Oh boy.
We need to support small businesses and entrepreneurs who form the backbone of the communities that we live in, that are teetering on the edge.
So we're going to support businesses by taxing them. Biden's picked
nobody
for
taxing them. No, by giving them these PPP, these loans.
Right, and then what?
And grants to get the right now. The idea behind the Biden policy here, I think, is just to get us, you know, through the next 6 months.
Tom, do you know how many
companies are going to close down?
Right,
or
right.
Small businesses are going to have to collapse if they don't get that support. And a lot of people are on unemployment runs out this week too, I think, or this month maybe. The federal stuff, and so it's going to be like, yeah, can we help people one more time?
Or do we need to? So the experts have predicted the unemployment rate would take till about 2021, the middle of 2021, to get to 7%. We're already there. We hit that number in September. So the recession on this thing is the U.S. is coming back stronger. What was it? Last quarter closed at 33%. They think this one's going to be about 14%. I know how far down it was, but it's bouncing back up again. So now with the idea of the vaccines coming in place, there are basically three different places that people spend money. One of them is recreational. That's really hurting. The other is housing and financing. That's doing fine. And the other one is the idea of spending money for certain, you know, big ticket items like cars. That got hurt for a little bit. All of that will come back again. The economy goes. 66% of the economy is driven by you, me, and everybody else spending money. And the idea is, does it come back in place when the vaccine is in place? Or is this an opportunity for the Democrats to say, hey, let's continue to do more and more spending?
It's essential that we move with urgency.
This is Janet Yellen, who will most likely be confirmed as the Treasury Secretary.
Yeah. Inaction will produce a self-reinforcing downturn, causing yet more devastation. We risk missing the obligation to address deeper structural problems: inequality, stagnant wages, especially for workers who lack a college education, communities that have seen industry disappear with no good jobs replacing lost ones, racial disparities in pay, job opportunities, housing, food security, and small business lending that deny wealth building to communities of color. Gender disparities that keep women out of the workforce and keep our economy from running at full force.
Okay, so that is your Treasury Secretary.
Yeah.
Talking Ooh. About how the government will get into all of those various places and really change the economy.
Who? And, but interestingly enough, she's always been a deficit hawk.
Mm.
She's like the Republicans in that she wants to sure that we keep track of that.
Yeah, but she's Keynesian, Tom. She believes in stimulating the economy through more government spending.
Well, yes, over this she says, but right now, in order to have the economy worth propping up, we need to, you know, come June, we need to be able to do something now to keep them afloat. And that's the big argument. You were saying the economic recovery is coming back strong, but they also say there are signs now that it's faltering in the midst of all these rising coronavirus stuff. So, that will still have to be debated. But, yeah, right now it's going to be a big battle between Joe Biden and Mitch McConnell, a Republican Senate and a Democratic president, about how much stimulus we'll still give.
Well, as Chuck Schumer says, first we take Georgia and then we change America. There we go. So looking to change America.
Hey, start it. You got to start somewhere.
That's right. It's because it's a horrible country. Tracy Taylor with a look at our horrible traffic. All righty. Oh, boy, look what time it is. Okay, I need the truncated version of the mailman. Give me your three best notes, but dig deep into the track. Just don't pick the first three. Go deep.
Oh,
I
can't. On the fly, I have to play it from the start.
Okay, go.
Hello!
All right, there we go. We're going to get to letter of the day in just a bit. I feel so bad for the mailman, but here we are, Tom. Let's get started.
Okay, we'll start off with the Seahawks win last night. Area code 817 says, Seahawk wins are all against poor and losing teams. One win against a winning team. Their three losses against winning teams. Buffalo throttled them. Quit bragging. Easiest schedule in the league. Wow. First off, I don't think any of us are bragging. And it's only the easiest schedule in the league from here on in, not beforehand.
Going on to vaccines, 425 says, my daughter has an autoimmune disease, so she gets sick very easily, hoping she can get one sooner than later.
Mm-hmm. Somebody did a shout out to Gonzaga. Yeah, they're number one. They knocked off Kansas. On the vaccine thing, 360 says, you all can have mine.
Oh, that's very nice. 360 says, so what about the West Coast PAC, independent testing of vaccines? Oh, is that not a thing anymore? I was wondering why. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll have to see. And I haven't heard anything about this in the news. Any idea how long we need to wait between the first and second COVID vaccine shots? Yeah, it's between 3 and 4 weeks. And are we, quote, somewhat covered after the first shot or only so many weeks after the second? I think you need both of them, but I'm not sure why.
Talking about Thanksgiving, 253 says, try ice fishing with four guys in a four. Oh, my God. A 4x8 ice house? Yikes.
And 360206, or area code 206. I grew up with guys like that. They aren't going to respect you, John, if you just give in. You have to stand your ground and be yourself no matter what.
I did. I learned that. It's my son that had the problem. Said George Clooney with the Flowbee 360 says it's basically what most barbers use. Flowbee.
And 206, actually, you attach the Flowbee to your own personal vacuum at home.
Okay. Inslee App, 206, here goes Curly.
Here goes Curly.
Okay.
I think that
that's a bad thing? It's a bad thing.
Yeah, I think it means you're getting up on your soapbox.
Okay, yeah.
And 360, releasing that COVID app now is like thinking about closing the barn doors after the horses have left.
And 253, even the government doesn't take COVID seriously. Look at the many governors who do what they want and tell us, well, okay, yeah, that's true.
Who do, yeah. On the Inslee app, continued 425, God, John, since you know everything, you should run the hospitals.
Okay, I'm going to do talk radio. All right. Oh, here we go. Let's see. There we are. Let's see there.
And now it is time for the letter of the day.
Thank you, Teeny Tiny. She's
comes from area code 360.
Uh-huh.
Great to hear a Rachel Bell cat story again. I remember in the early days of the Tom and Curly show when you guys were on in the morning, she once joked that the sound of her cat puking up a hairball at 6 a.m. was her, quote, spinster alarm clock.
Ah, good old days.
Thank you, 360, I think. Letter of the day.
That's all she wrote.
That's all she wrote.
Didn't write no more.
Nope. She left the glitter.
Another hour, Tom, because I know it all.
That's right. Spread the word, John.